Here I stand in the sun. I'm chilled by a cool breeze, searching for the strength to get down on my knees. Another beautiful thing passes by, and all I can do is ask why. And it feels like I'm standing on broken knees when you've given me wings to fly.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Our next guest says a good song is a good song. That was a good song. It was called Here I Stand. That's Jenny Fleming Trio. They're coming to the Performing Arts Center of Rapid City tomorrow and Friday. Joining us now from the road, Jenny Fleming, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, you're on the road and you just took a little pit stop to talk to us. We appreciate that.
Yep, we did. We pulled over on the highway.
We love it. Well, thank you for not driving while you have the conversation. We'd hate to see something bad happen on the road. Tell me, what is that road travel like for you? How much do you travel, and what's it like for the group?
Well, the trio doesn't travel much anymore. Our bass player lives in England, and he's back just to do this reunion tour with us. So it's been 10 years. Since the three of us have been on the road together.
Wow.
But in the meantime, Jake Fleming, who is a Rapid City native, and myself, we're both in several bands and do quite a bit of touring throughout the year.
All right, so tell me who's in the band. Jake Fleming and yourself?
Yep, and our bass player is Chad Langford.
Okay. And what's it like getting together after 10 years and spending that time together again?
It's a bit like riding a bike, is what we've found. Even though it's been a full decade, their hands still know where to go. Somehow the lyrics are still there in my mind, and all of the old jokes that we've, private jokes that we've come up with over the years, they're still there, and they're still funny.
Yeah.
So it's been a blast getting together and remembering all the fun times we've had together.
I want to go back a little bit and talk about your classical piano background, because that's really interesting. You were a quite successful competitive classical piano on that circuit. And tell me how that sort of got started for you, and then let's talk about how it translates into your performances today.
Well, I grew up in a family where music was sort of what we did. Both of my parents were classical musicians, and all four of my grandparents and even two of my great-grandparents. In fact, my great-grandmother taught piano at St. Olaf until she retired at age 65, at which time she moved across the river to Carleton College and taught for another 15 years.
Oh, wow.
So music was just what we did in our house. I think that there are families who bond over academics or athletics, and ours just happened to be music. So we didn't really have a choice. We had to take piano as long as we lived under his roof.
Mm-hmm.
And so three of us, my two younger sisters and I, we were the three that really loved it and took to piano. And so by the time we were about 10, we started competing just locally and then regionally, and one national competition. And I think I had a little bit of success with piano, partly because it was just such a focus in my house. I think anytime you make a kid develop a skill every day for an hour or 2 hours a day, they're going to see some success.
Right.
So at 13, I played with the Billings Symphony, and then I went on to win a couple other regional competitions. But beyond getting my degree in piano, I really don't play anymore. I teach. I have 30 private students that come to my house every week. And so I teach classical piano. But I think what I took from that is this, heavy discipline and dedicating time every day to something that I'm interested in. And quite obviously, I'm interested in singing and recording, and that dedication has proven a good thing for me over the years.
Yeah. So as you sing and as you as a trio or you as an individual sort of look at a song and say, you know, yeah, I'm going to put my spin on it. I'm going to make this my own. Mm-hmm. Is that a discipline that you practice, or is that more of a, you know, a creative free flowing kind of thing? How does that work for you?
I would just say that it's an interest of mine, and any, you know, anything that you're interested in, you're willing to spend time on and dedicate your time to. When it comes to the trio, I think that those arrangements came from all three of us.
Yeah.
Maybe one person more than the other two, or it was a collaborative effort. It's just, it's different from song to song. But I do think that that was one direction that the trio really agreed on, was that if we were going to do material by other people, and that includes jazz standards and hymns and the Beatles and the Grateful Dead and Cyndi Lauper and, you know, that we were going to put our own spin on it. We weren't going to just regurgitate what had already been done or try to replicate what the artist had already done. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I think that it is sort of a jazz approach, that we're always interested in what an artist has to say about a song, not how good they are at emulating another artist.
Right. So give me an example of something you play by the Grateful Dead and how you sort of approach, you know, you got to kind of tiptoe slightly around that, don't you?
Well, yeah, and, you know, big Deadhead fans maybe don't appreciate our arrangement as much as some other audience members, but the song we did by the Grateful Dead is called If I Had the World to Give. Mm-hmm. And that was actually a song that Jake grew up on, and he just remembers loving the words as a kid. And so our approach to that arrangement was sort of, you know, filled with wonderment and maybe from a child's eyes and trying to get a certain feeling across with the tempo that we chose or the harmony that we put underneath the melody. And I think that that is probably something that served us well, was that we were always going for a certain feeling.
Right.
Not a, how high can I sing this, or how fast can we play this? It was always like, how close can we get to a certain feeling?
So what then is Jake's sort of musical legacy background? You know, you grew up with this music in your family and classical music. What about Jake and Chad?
Jake, as I mentioned, is from Rapid City, and he comes from a long line of musicians, most notably his father, Bill Fleming, who was always a guitar player and a songwriter. And in fact, the trio has recorded several of Bill's tunes over the years. Mm. So that's how Jake came to music. And then I think in junior high, he found the saxophone and, of course, participated in all the public school music programs. And continued as a music major at Montana State University, went on to teach high school band for just a few years before the trio started, and he quit to tour full-time with the trio. Now he teaches privately guitar, bass, sax. I think there's probably a couple of drum students in there, and maybe even trumpet, or he's sort of a jack-of-all-trades kind of guy.
Yeah.
And pursues music quite relentlessly.
Yeah.
Through it, you know, whether it's songwriting or writing music for advertising spots or composing music for his yoga classes. He became a yoga instructor a few years ago.
I love that. Yeah, why not, right? When you have students, you know, music students and their parents, because when you know, are teaching a kid music, you're always, you know, working with the adults in their lives who are, you know, paying the bill and getting them to lessons and stuff. What kind of conversations do you have, you know, about, like, we do this because it has value, but you never know where it will take you. Do you sort of try to open that door for them?
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. That is a tricky conversation to have. And interestingly enough, I just had this conversation with one of my high school students yesterday. They have a talent show in Bozeman that she happened to win, mm-hmm. which I, you know, of course, I was very proud of her for winning. But what I found myself telling her was, we pursue music for a different reason, because winning doesn't always happen. Or in my case, maybe you don't always sell as many tickets as you had hoped, or you didn't sell as many albums, or right. whatever it is. Yeah. If you're looking for an external validation to the art that you're trying to make, then you will always come up short. So the reason you pursue something has to be different, and that is, for the love of the craft, or how interesting you think your arrangements are. There are times where I sit down to the piano to do an arrangement and 5 hours will go by and I haven't even noticed. But then beyond that, to share it with an audience who really appreciates it, or getting an email from someone to say, your arrangement of such and such got me through a really tough time in my life, then those become the reasons that you continue pursuing something.
Yeah. When I sit down and listen to your music, my first thought was, I haven't heard this before. Pay attention. That's an interesting response. You know, first, I think our producer, Chris Loffrey, said, he really appreciated your voice vocally, first of all. You know, he noticed that. And I think the first thing I noticed was just like, I think it might have been the arrangement. I haven't heard this done in this way before. And I wanted to hear more. What kind of reactions from first-time listeners and long-time listeners do you value as an artist?
Well, I'd say that's one of the nicer compliments I've heard all week. But I do think that that's a nice thing to hear, because what we're hoping to do as artists, when you take a song like, say, Amazing Grace, that everybody has heard and is probably the most recorded song we know of, what we're trying to do is change the form that it comes in so that the listener gets to hear it again for the first time.
Yeah, right.
You know, there are things in our lives where we recite them so often, or we've heard them so often, or that the meaning sort of falls out of it. The story I like to tell around Amazing Grace is that as I was growing up, my father was a Lutheran pastor, and we would always say the same prayer before our meals.
Right.
And we would say it so fast that we had no idea what it meant. Mainly we said it fast because you weren't allowed to eat until the prayer was over. So,
right.
You know, we'd race through the prayer. And it wasn't until I was about 10 or 11 or 12 even that I really stopped to think about what I was saying. And as kids often do, I had most of the words wrong.
Right.
There was like those pop songs that we grew up with, and we grow up and think, well, that can't possibly be the lyric, and it's usually not.
Right.
But that's how long it took me to figure that out, and I think that happens certainly with pop songs, but also with things like Amazing Grace, where we haven't really stopped to consider what we're saying. So if you change the form or the tempo or the chords underneath it and ask your listener to listen closely one more time, they get to hear it again for the first time, like you're describing.
So do you sit down with it and just say, you know, what if it sounded like this? Mm-hmm. What if, oh, that's good stuff. And then that's when that 5 hours slips away, right?
Right.
Because you're in that flow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or I remember a student saying to me one time, as they were learning a song by Duke Ellington called Don't Get Around Much Anymore, mm-hmm. which is a very famous jazz standard, and it's sort of a medium swing, kind of very happy, upbeat tune, but the lyrics to the song are really sad, like this: she had, the main character had been broken up with, and they couldn't find the the courage to leave the house anymore. And, like, that's what the content was. And the student said to me, how come the music doesn't match the words? Which I immediately took as a challenge and rewrote the harmony to match the lyric content. And we recorded that on our most recent album. Yeah. It's called Don't Get Around Much Anymore. It's on Come to Life.
Right.
So sometimes something as simple as that is the inspiration. But for the most part, you're right. Yeah. We say, what if?
Yeah.
And try and flesh it out.
Do you just feel incredibly, lucky and to be making music as an adult then and having it, traveling and having that that creative process and that performance be such a solid part of your life still?
I absolutely do. Mm. That's not to say that this lifestyle doesn't come without its frustrations. It certainly does. And there's reasons why artists sort of have a name for themselves as being crazy or aloof or, there is a bit of the hand-to-mouth thing going on. And every now and then I'll catch myself thinking, well, I wonder if I could get my old job back at the art gallery or just, just punching a clock sounds nice. And then I think, I would last for maybe 2 weeks and then I'd get frustrated again. So I know that I'm where I'm supposed to be. I think the challenge is to always find a project that you're interested in and willing to dedicate time to every day.
Well, we are.
So, for right now, touring with the trio again, I'm really happy to have this opportunity to be back on the road with these guys.
Well, we are happy that you are on the way to Rapid City. Please journey safely. The Jenny Fleming Trio is at the Performing Arts Center of Rapid City April 6th and 7th at 6:30 Mountain Time. Thank you so much, Jenny, for your time today. Journey well.
Thanks for having me. We'll see you soon in Rapid. Once around the sun, I can hardly wait for it all.